This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. The election for governor of Vermont in 2014 was far closer than anyone expected. So close, in fact, that it ultimately had to be decided by the legislature when neither candidate received 50% of the vote. But in the end, Governor Peter Shumlin was elected to a third term in office, and he said he got the message.
I heard clearly in the election this fall that Vermonters expect more from me and from the state to help improve their lives. From jobs to the environment, I have an agenda for progress that I'll partner with you to fulfill in this term and beyond. That agenda is rooted in the abundance of hope that I have for Vermont's future and my sincerest belief that our best days are ahead of us, not behind us.
Since that pronouncement, the governor has had to deal with a number of serious challenges, including closing a $113 million budget gap, finding a funding source to clean up Lake Champlain and other state waters, and what to do about the state's health insurance exchange, which, to put it mildly, did not live up to expectations. But the 2015 legislative session did wrap up in time with some 11th-hour wrangling and compromises, and now Governor Shumlin has an opportunity to prove to Vermonters that, as he said, the best days are ahead. And we are pleased to have Governor Peter Shumlin with us today in our VPR studios in Colchester. Governor, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you may have some questions or comments for the governor as well. You can write to us via our Vermont Edition Facebook page, also by emailing vermontedition@vpr.net, or just giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211. What do you think should be Governor Shumlin's top priorities moving ahead? Do you think the legislative session that just finished was productive and positive for the state, or were you disappointed at the direction that the legislature took? You can join the conversation, 1-800-639-2211. Governor Shumlin, we've got a lot to get to, but first I want to get your take on this legislative session that just wrapped up. Representative Tony Klein referred to it as probably the strangest year that he served in the legislature. While you've commented that the session was great for Vermont, and those are two very different assessments, does Tony Klein have a point about the strangeness of this session, even if you believe it was ultimately successful?
Well, I think Tony's referring to the very end of the session when Senator McAllister is obviously going through the allegations that hit and was arrested in a state house, which is certainly unprecedented. But having said that, so I agree with Tony. A session can be strange and productive, and it was. And let's just look at what we got done. Putting it in perspective, we're at a time when most Vermonters and probably most Americans are pretty discouraged by government in Washington, D.C. They just don't take on the big challenges that are holding us back. You look around the states, and many of the state legislatures are avoiding the issues that would lift up middle-class incomes and help folks become more prosperous. And we all had a common agenda going in, which is how do we make Vermont's economy work for every single Vermonter, and how do we sustain our quality of life? And I just felt that, given the enormous agenda that I laid out, and I think it was as ambitious an agenda as I've laid out so far, look at the results of really tough things. $113 million budget shortfall balanced in a way that's going to put us on a fiscally sustainable path going forward. Was all of the work done? No, but the vast majority was. Going after property taxes, Vermonters said clearly two things to us. Number one, our property taxes, school spending is holding back our ability to prosper and pay our bills. And you've got a system that was designed for 110 or 20,000 kids that's got 78,000 in it and dropping going forward. And you haven't done a darn thing about it. A very good bill to partner with local communities to not only right size our educational delivery system, but also to improve quality. Third, they said, we've got blue-green algae blooming in our lakes that stinks so badly we don't want to sleep in our camps next to it in the summertime. We don't want to fish in it. We don't want to swim in it. What is going on with the most beautiful state in the nation that we keep kicking a can down the road on clean water? We passed the most comprehensive clean water bill that the state's seen. Next, energy. One thing that's driving the fact that Vermont has the lowest unemployment rate this side of the Mississippi is the jobs that we're creating. As we move from the old model of energy, where you bring in power from out there somewhere, utilities try to sell as much of it as they can through poles and wires to customers, to a model that says instead, we're going to come in and button up your old, replace your old windows and doors, blow in cellulose into your house, put solar panels on your roof or your front yard or in a community solar project, put a heat pump in your basement to get you off of oil altogether, and move to a green, clean energy future where your excess power is shared by your neighbors through net metering. That is unprecedented in the energy world. When you talk about the climate change challenge, that's where the rubber hits the road. We passed a reset energy bill, and finally, we passed a bill to help protect Vermont's most vulnerable kids. So I just felt that when you see the agenda we laid out, it was extraordinary. The shortcoming was healthcare. We didn't make enough progress there, but everything else got done.
We're going to talk about healthcare and a lot of these things you just mentioned in a moment. I do want to start with this issue of water cleanup. And one of the big items on the agenda was getting the revenue to help clean up Lake Champlain and the other waters, as you said. You had this to say about the importance of Vermont coming up with its own solution.
We know the biggest contributors to our water quality problems. It is no mystery to us. 40% from farm runoff, 20% from roads and developed lands. We also know the largest pollution sources that we should address first and where they are located. And that's what's different about our approach. Now, if the EPA doesn't approve our plan, we would lose the flexibility to target our biggest problems first and instead have to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on the limited areas where federal law gives the EPA direct authority.
So I want to get to the funding method for cleanup in a moment. But first, you warned in that clip that the federal EPA could impose its own costly plan had Vermont not acted. They still could, though. And I want to know the process or the timeline for that. When will the EPA give a thumbs up or down on what the state plans to do with the money that's being raised to clean up the lake?
Well, the administrator of the EPA, Gina McCarthy, who's doing an extraordinary job, and I are friends and partners in this effort to try and clean up our waterways. Gina and the team at EPA has been following our bill very carefully. They will make a decision. We've submitted a plan to them, and they'll make a decision soon with the federal government. You never know exactly what soon means. It's saying to us one of two things. Either your plan's not adequate or your plan is adequate, but we're also going to ask you to do the following additional things. So I doubt they're just going to say, your plan is perfect, Vermont, and we're out of your way. But I do expect that they're going to be very happy with the fact that we came up with a clean water fund that's going to be funded by a variety of sources. Vermonters are putting money into the game. We're raising private money. We've already risen, with one phone call, frankly, $5 million from Cura Green Mountain. We're putting federal money in. Our extraordinary congressional delegation, Senator Leahy Sanders and Congressman Welch, brought in about $42 million last year. There's more coming, we hope, in the future. The point is we're going to use those resources to do what we never did in the past. In the past, former governors have tried to clean up the lake, and they've taken what I would describe as a shotgun approach. Put as many pellets into the slug as you can get in there, pop them off, and hope some of them hit. What we're doing differently this time is by actually prioritizing the three areas of pollution that you just played the clip on, and we're able now to have the data to go to the highest polluters first, work with them to get it right, and then this bill gives us the ability, if they refuse, to ensure that they clean up their act.
Well, part of the money that's being raised is from a 0.2% property transfer tax, and I'm wondering if you're happy with that method of raising the money to clean up the lake, especially when you've already expressed a desire for Vermont to be a more affordable state for first-time home buyers. Doesn't this sort of hurt a first-time home buyer who's getting hit with this property transfer tax?
Well, you can criticize any tax. That's one thing that I've learned. Finding a funding source that we could all agree on was really critically important. I personally think it's fair. Listen, you don't go out and buy a house every year or every month. Let's remember that second homeowners pay the transfer tax. We have a lot of second homeowners in the state who enjoy our waterways when they're here. So I actually thought it was a pretty elegant way to raise the money.
A fertilizer tax idea was one that I think were behind at one point.
I put that forward. It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, obviously, we know that one of the big contributors to our pollution challenges is the nitrogen, phosphorus that's coming out of commercial fertilizer. The legislature didn't see fit to adopt that one, so I'm happy with the funding package.
Well, it was also really opposed by Vermont's farming community, and there was an idea for a rooms and meals tax. That was opposed by the Chamber of Commerce. So instead, the property transfer tax plan was adopted. But could you have done more to fight for a fertilizer or rooms and meals tax, both of which target more directly groups with an effect on or a vested interest in keeping the lake clean?
I'm thrilled that we got out with a bill that finally raises the money to get this right. And, you know, now our job is to exercise a plan that makes sense. My big fear, Mitch, is that the EPA has obviously control over how we deal with this issue, and they have the same control in other states. And the problem for us as a state is that it's not as if we could clean up our waters or not. We're going to clean up our waters, and it's going to be the Vermont way, which we put forward and passed, or the EPA's way. And the problem for the EPA is that, like so much in Washington, D.C., they have not updated the Federal Clean Water Act in generations. They can't get anything through Congress. And their only power over states like Vermont is to say, you shall flip out, change, rebuild your wastewater treatment plants across the state. That's the only jurisdiction. That's the only stick that they have. So if you think about it, in Vermont, 3% of our water challenges, of the pollution we're putting into our water right now, comes from our wastewater treatment plants, 3%. So if you go the EPA way, 97% of the problem is not addressed, and we're going to be sitting here with our kids and grandkids having worse blue-green algae in the future. So it's really important that we get this right as a state. The legislature had courage to come up with a plan. Grassroots folks, I'm up tonight at talking to the Friends of Lake Champlain up in Franklin County at Pixley Tyler's place, but grassroots Vermonters from all walks of life, farmers, municipal folks, commercial real estate folks, everybody said enough is enough. We've got to take action. And I think we came out with a really bold plan.
We are speaking with Governor Peter Shumlin. You can join the conversation as well. Do you support Governor Shumlin's agenda? Are you happy with the legislature's progress this session? Call us at 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to the phones right now. Scott is on the line from Pomfret. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mitch. Hi, Governor.
Hi, Scott.
Hi. So to give you a little context, I have friends in Vermont, young folks in their late 20s, 30s, who love Vermont. They want to stay here. They want to make a life here. And they're afraid to commit because of housing costs, job insecurity, a number of things. And so this was sort of a roll-up-your-sleeves kind of session. And I wonder if you might talk a bit about what the future looks like in the next section about what we can do to attract young people and make them feel comfortable to stay here.
Well, you know, Scott, you hit it on the head, and I had the pleasure of speaking at UVM's graduation on Sunday, where I just implored the graduates to stay here and work here. And I just came from the Business Expo here at the Sheraton, which is going on right now, the 31st Expo. And the first woman I talked to with one of the companies had just graduated from UVM, grew up in Middlebury, just landed a great job, and she's staying in Vermont. And we need more folks to do that. But, you know, let's look at the story. When I became governor 4.5 years ago, we were facing a very different challenge than we are today. I had employers saying to me constantly, we're going to do a layoff, governor. We're downsizing. Things are terrible. This recession's whacked us in the teeth, and it's still hurting us. Now, when I go around the expo, as I just did, employers are saying to me, governor, we are growing. We're expanding. If you could just find us more trained workers, we could grow exponentially. And that's exciting stuff. So what we've been doing is partnering, making bold decisions that's going to help make sure that we have every single Vermonter able to be in the workforce that requires training that's different than when I was a kid growing up in the state. What does that mean? Universal pre-K, the first state to adopt universal pre-K. I'm darn proud of that. It goes into effect this year. It means early college, dual enrollment and the college program that we put together where you can literally now, since I've been governor, earn a free year of college credits while you're in high school through dual enrollment in early college. That's a big deal. Then the Vermont Scholars Program, which says, and again, this is something we put forward, if you stay in Vermont and you work here for 5 years, that UVM graduate I just saw, and you work in a STEM field where we need you, we will pay a full year of your college tuition or a semester of your associate's degree if you just stay and work in the state for 5 years. Those are the kind of things that we've got to do. Make sure that we're training first-generation kids to get beyond high school and give incentives for young people to stay here. And I think it's making a difference. Let's not forget, we got the lowest unemployment rate this side of the Mississippi. That's good news.
Thanks for the phone call, Scott. Let's go to Chris, who's on the line in Morrisville. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Calling with a suggestion, as 40% of the phosphorus is coming from the farms, a couple of things we could do. One would be to put out fencing crews hiring senior high school students who are on their way to college. Many farms plant corn and use fertilizer right up to the river's edge. And if you had, it's quantifiable progress, so it would not tend to be wasteful like many government programs. The other thing we could do would be have solar-powered stock tanks, because often kayaking by a cow taking a flop in the river.
Right.
And there are some farms that really need to be shut down. We've got one just outside of Stowe where they have 10 acres of land where their 160 cows get recreation. And it's a gravel bar. It washes out a different way every year, bringing tons of phosphorus into the river.
Chris, thanks very much for that. I want the governor to have a chance to respond to that. What about putting more pressure on farms, Governor?
Well, you know, let's remember that 99.9% of the farmers in Vermont want to do the right thing, and they care about clean water more than anyone because they work the land every day. They're out there more than we are, getting in our cars and going to our desks to work. I mean, Vermont farmers love our natural environment, and they've been protecting it. You know, they feel very passionate about protecting it. So the beauty of this bill is what it does is it gives the farmers the resources they need to do just what Chris just mentioned, proper fencing to keep cows out of waterways altogether, giving them the resources to do tilling in a different way so that we're avoiding runoff when they're seeding, we're injecting manure in where it's appropriate into the soil instead of spreading it like we do now, doing all the things that we know are common sense that Chris just pointed out to get it right, and giving them the resources, some of the resources to help do it. And for every farm, it's a different story, different soils, different solution. And then the bill says, not just to farmers, but don't forget, it's not just farmers. It's runoff from our dirt roads that we're getting in a climate change-induced storm, so municipal governments are involved in helping to get drainage right. It's impervious surfaces, rooftops, and parking lots that don't absorb water. We got to get that right. But those three categories are the pollution sources. And what this bill says is, here's the resources to go get it right. Ask all three sectors to cooperate. And when they don't, enforce. And that's the difference. That's where the rubber will hit the road. For the very small percentage of farmers, municipalities, or commercial landowners that don't make the changes, we're going to force them to do so. And I think that's really going to be the difference for Vermont.
Got more of your phone calls coming up. We're speaking with Governor Peter Shumlin today on Vermont Edition. Coming up, we're going to talk about the education bill, Vermont Health Connect, and much more. You can call us at 1-800-639-2211. Back after this short break, this is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Governor Peter Shumlin is our guest today. Do you think the governor has the state on the right track? Do you agree that the legislative session that just ended was productive for the state? And do you have confidence that the budget gap is being closed with the right mix of cuts and revenue? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You can also post to the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Governor, let's move on to health care. And I know that you were not happy to have dropped your plans for a single-payer health care system. In the end, you decided it would just be too costly to implement. But now the big problem could be the fate of Vermont Health Connect, which at the end of this month has a big test looming. And we heard just today our own Peter Hirschfeld was reporting that Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott says Vermont should not even wait to see if the health insurance exchange should operate properly, should instead cut its losses and have the state of Connecticut take over implementing a health exchange for Vermont. What is your feeling about that possible scenario?
Well, the best outcome is for Vermont Health Connect to work, and there's really two reasons for that. Number one, we do healthcare differently, we in Massachusetts, than any other state in America, which Connecticut cannot do. In other words, we subsidize healthcare for low-income Vermonters higher than the subsidies for the federal bill before it even passed. So it's very difficult for us just to turn a whole function over to another state. Now, there's some merit in the idea of, and Phil's right about this, and we've been talking to them, of taking the SHOP provision, which basically is the ability for business to sign up, and try to grab that from another state where it's working. But that's a teeny part of the mission.
Talking about small businesses specifically?
Well, right now, all businesses shop through our insurance carriers, Blue Cross Blue Shield MVP. And the federal government, we would be happy to leave it that way, frankly. The federal government requires us to have a function that works. Many of the states are facing this together. And we're talking about cooperating with other states to see if there's a way we can share that technology. But that's a fraction of our challenge. The real challenge is that we use – this is the best kept secret in Vermont – we use the several hundred million dollars of federal funding to build Vermont Health Connect to help replace our Medicaid healthcare administrative system because it was old, it was tired, and we didn't want Vermonters to have to pay that bill out of their tax money. Now think about this for a minute. Vermont Health Connect, we should be proud of the fact, we've signed up a disproportionate number of Vermonters for the Affordable Care Act. We've cut our uninsured rate in half. This is not reported when we talk about the disappointment in a website. It is working for Vermont, technically. That's why we are down to a 3.5% uninsured rate, which is virtually universal coverage, competing with Massachusetts for the lowest uninsured rate in America. So the challenge we have is that we also have about 200,000 Vermonters on some form of Medicaid. Think about that. State with 650,000 people, 200,000 are on some form of Medicaid. We used the federal money to build the delivery technology delivery system for those patients, for those clients too. So bottom line is the best thing that can happen is for Vermont Health Connect to work for us. Now, as you know, many states have struggled with this technology. The president of the United States struggled with it. He originally contracted with the CGI, the president, as did we. He fired CGI. We also parted company with him. He brought in Optum to help fix the federal exchange, which is working quite well now. We've brought in Optum to help fix ours. I'm cautiously optimistic that we can make this work.
Cautiously optimistic. What needs to happen at the end of May for you to be satisfied that Vermont Health Connect is up and running properly?
Well, there's two big dates looming. One is the end of May when we want the change in circumstance to work, which is in plain English – the problem that most Vermonters are feeling heartbreak about. In other words, if you're having problems with billing, if you're having problems changing something in your plan, you keep getting a bill when you've already paid, or you're getting a bill for something that you should have paid, and they can't get it right. It's all about folks who are in that queue or something changed in the process of their insurance, which happens with all of us, that cannot be fixed in an automated fashion. So by the end of the month, we are working very hard to get that to work. Then the second big date is this fall when we need the website to work really well as we re-enroll for next year. And those are the two big dates.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Caitlin on the line from Shelburne. Hi, Caitlin.
Yes, hi. Governor Shumlin, thank you for your public service and your attention to healthcare. I'm excited about some of the things that Vermont is doing. I'm particularly concerned about the role of lobbyists in the state legislature, and BPR reported that medical lobbyists gave big money to our legislators this year. Did politics affect the sudden shift, in your view, on the morality of informed consent for invasive medical procedures that contain known toxic chemicals? I'm referring here to Bill H-98, which discriminates against Vermonters who seek daycare and education and coerces them to vaccinate, even though vaccinations contain low doses of known toxic chemicals. Would you say something?
Thank you, Caitlin, for
that
call. Thank you for the call. Listen, there are lobbyists in Montpelier on both sides of almost every issue, including this one, as you probably know. So I don't think we can blame lobbyists for this one. But this is where I am. As you know, I feel very strongly that Vermonters should vaccinate their kids. It's just common sense. I vaccinated mine. I'm urging you to vaccinate yours. I got vaccinated when I was a kid. And, you know, we wiped out diseases like polio and others that devastated life for many, many years. Having said that, I was really hoping that the changes that we made 2.5 years ago to make it more difficult or to have better education before you opt out would work. It's clear to me that that's not going so well. Our numbers have not gone down. In fact, they're going the wrong way in many cases. And, you know, it's debatable whether we did enough. So I would always prefer for government not to be telling parents what they need to do, inject into the arms of their kids. And I bet a lot of Vermonters wish with me that we wouldn't have to mandate it. Having said that, we're not making progress, and we've really got to, because, you know, when you don't vaccinate your kids, you're not only hurting your kids, but you're hurting the kids and the folks that are also interacting with them. So I've come to believe that that we should try removing the philosophical exemption. What it will still allow is for a religious exemption. You don't need a letter from your preacher or your rabbi or whoever it is. And it also allows for a medical exemption. So there are still ways to get out of it if you really feel strongly about it. But I hope that removing the philosophical exemption will allow us as a state to raise those numbers and be sensible about vaccinations.
Governor, let's talk about education for a minute. And when it comes to school consolidation, an education bill was passed that gives incentives for small districts to merge, for larger districts to spend less. Does it really have any teeth, though, since it's all still a voluntary system?
Mitch, I actually think that that is going to be the most significant education bill that's passed in a long, long time. And I say that because it actually does exactly what I hoped the legislature would do and what I called for in January. You're never going to have a one-size-fits-all consolidation or right-sizing the ship bill that works in Vermont, because every community's circumstances and neighborhooding community circumstances are different. And what's right for two communities in Windham County would be dead wrong for two communities in the Northeast Kingdom. So what I said is, let's remove the disincentives to sensible governance. That means take away small school grants, get rid of them over time, take away this system where we literally, through the phantom students, as we call it, fund empty chairs in classrooms. We're literally in some schools funding more empty chairs than full chairs. Then let's build a really strong partnership with local communities, not to just talk about what's happening today, but we now have the data, and my secretary, Rebecca Holcomb, is out in communities doing this every day with school boards, select boards, communities, where we can say, you think it's bad now? This is where you're going to be in 5 years, and this is where you're going to be in 10 years. And in many of our small rural communities, those numbers are eye-popping and startling. Then we're going to be able to say, through an assessment system, instead of you and I arguing about whether your school is performing well in terms of academic and financial outcomes, we're going to be able to have a measurement system that says, Mitch, we don't need to bicker about this anymore. This is how you're doing. And I think when you put those three things together, you're going to have local communities with the incentives that were passed by the legislature making really smart decisions like Pomfret and Bridgewater did in the last town meeting to consolidate where their schools are half empty and they're hurting kids because of a lack of opportunity for those kids. Then it says, the bill says in it, if all of that doesn't happen, the secretary and the state board have the ability to eventually go in and where it will be necessary, and I think it'll be a very small minority of the cases, to say, hey, you got to change this. So it's big incentives to go to K through 12 districts to stop saying it's okay to have schools so small that we're hurting educational opportunity for those kids, and to consolidate into a much smarter delivery system, but it's going to happen organically from local communities in partnership with the state. I believe that's the only way we're ever going to get accomplished this.
I think the problem may be what critics would say is that word eventually, because House Minority Leader Don Turner has said that the bill won't do anything to reduce property tax burdens that are linked to education in Vermont and the spending anytime soon. If he's wrong about that, why?
Well, I mean, let me just say, Don Turner's the minority leader. His job is to beat up everything that happens. I mean, that's what minority leaders are hired to do.
He's got a point about property taxes, though, in the state of Vermont. I mean, he's not the only one complaining about the fact that there are very high property taxes in this state that are linked to education.
So my question would be, what would he do differently?
Well, I don't have him here, but
okay.
I would tell you.
Or what would one do differently? I mean, really, listen, you can't criticize us from both sides. We're getting a lot of criticism because the legislature actually put in place a 2-year cap that caps spending and says if you spend beyond this amount, 2%, unless if you're a high spender, lower if you're a low spender. So it's flexible for the low spenders, giving him room. But it literally says if you overspend, if you can't get your costs under control, you're going to pay a huge penalty at the local level. So you can't argue that the cap is a terrible thing and then say nothing happened on property taxes. I also don't think, Mitch, that one can say that this bill isn't – let's put it this way. If the leadership on the Republican Party can show us a statewide consolidation plan that mandates consolidation that would be better than this bill, how come they haven't done it?
Let's take a phone call from Heather in North Bennington. Hi, Heather. You're on with Governor Peter Shumlin.
Good afternoon, Governor. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am really concerned about education in the state of Vermont. School consolidation in places like Nebraska and Maine have not done well at all. And we have 93 towns in the state of Vermont that enjoy school choice. Those towns who have tuition vouchers tend to spend significantly less than towns that don't have school choice. In a lot of polls, parents, residents are really in favor of school choice. Why is this not being looked at as a model? Why are we going the way of H 361 in the education consolidation bill?
Well, I don't think we are. The beauty of this bill is that it leaves in place the ability for local schools to do exactly what you just said. If they currently have choice, you know, they're able to keep it. And there's nothing that precludes that arrangement in this bill. But I think going back to Nebraska and Maine and the challenges they've had consolidating, quote unquote, small schools, it's really important to look at the data here. And when we talk about small schools in Maine and Nebraska, those are big schools in Vermont. In other words, our schools, when we talk about small in Vermont, we're talking about micro schools. We're talking about, you know, we've got a high school with 60 kids in it. We've got elementary schools that literally have half of the number of students that they, half of our schools, this is startling, half of our schools have half of the number of kids they had at the peak of our enrollments. So, I mean, we're talking about little teeny micro schools. And what happens, if you listen to the secretary, Rebecca Holcomb was doing a heck of a job, is that those kids are denied opportunities that in these little teeny micro units that they should have in order to be able to meet the workforce that we that so desperately needs employees that are, you know, well-trained and ready to rock. So my point is, be careful about the data. Make sure that you're comparing apples and apples. And if you look at Maine and Nebraska, I think you'll find that their definition of small makes Vermont look teeny.
Let's go back to the phones. Emily is on the line from Brattleboro. Hi, Emily.
Hello. Hi, Governor.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in. I want to ask you to think about the problem that even if we have lower unemployment, it's only meaningful if we have people who are making a livable wage. So I hope you agree with me that a minimum wage ought to be a livable wage, which is now pegged at $21, which you folks in Montpelier are often, pretty much all of you, making a livable wage or more, but the rest of the state isn't. So what my question is are you ready to look at the kind of innovations that we see in monetary systems and able to address the scarcity of money? Like VBSR has a mutual credit system, and we also see that major corporations use mutual credit systems. Are you ready to begin to look at the kind of innovations we can use in monetary systems to address the scarcity of means of exchange, the scarcity of the tools of exchange, money? Would you like to begin to look? Yeah.
Let's let the governor answer that, Emily. Thank you for your question.
Thanks for your call, Emily. Listen, I'm proud of the fact that when President Obama 2 years ago identified in his State of the State, one of the things that's holding back low-income Americans and Vermonters, it's not making adequate money. It's a minimum wage that's too low. And I joined together with Dan Malloy of Connecticut, the governor of Connecticut, and a few others, and Governor Cuomo from New York, and we raised our minimum wages. And I'm proud that we did that. Having said that, I'm always interested in any innovation that will help raise incomes for low-income Vermonters. Our challenge as a state, and this is true across the country, but at least we address the real problems in Vermont, we take them on, is that middle-class folks find they're playing by the rules, they're working a couple of jobs. If there's two couples, they're both working, if your family has two heads of household. And you know, they're seeing their bills pile up faster than they can pay them. And low-income Vermonters are hurting, you know, as much or more than they were in the bottom of the recession. So this is the challenge for America. This is the challenge for Vermont. How do we make sure that this economy works for everybody, not just those that were doing well in the first place?
We're talking with Governor Peter Shumlin. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. We'll get his thoughts on some other issues and topics of the day, including his recent endorsement of Hillary Clinton for president. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm, and we are speaking this hour with Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin. And Governor, I want to get your thoughts on this. You announced in a tweet yesterday that you are endorsing Hillary Clinton for the Democratic presidential nomination. And I have to ask, is it somewhat disrespectful for the governor of Vermont to make such an endorsement just as the state's junior senator Bernie Sanders is announcing his official Vermont kickoff campaign for that same nomination?
Well, I have tremendous respect for Bernie, and I'm glad that he's running. And, you know, to be candid, I don't think you can find a better U.S. Senate team than we have in Senator Leahy and Senator Sanders. And if it was a choice between Hillary Clinton for U.S. Senator of Vermont or Bernie Sanders for U.S. Senator of Vermont, I'm voting for Bernie. I think the question for me as governor is, in light of the progress that President Obama has been making, he inherited a heck of a mess. He's reduced, cut our deficit in half. We're creating jobs. He's created over 14 million new jobs in a very, very tough financial challenges that he took on. Who's best capable of, who's best trained, who is most ready to take on not only the financial challenge we have of making sure that this economy works for the middle class, but also the international crises that seem to double by the day? And I just think there's no denying that Hillary Clinton is the right candidate to be president of the United States if we want this country to continue to prosper and continue to make logical choices that that will serve us well overseas. And, you know, Hillary, I cannot remember a president in my lifetime who did more to lift up the middle class than Bill Clinton. Full stop. And I believe that Hillary Clinton's been fighting for the middle class all her life, and she's going to make an extraordinary president. I want to do what I can to elect her.
Well, I'm a little curious about the timing, though, and not to harp on it too much. But, you know, why not have waited a few days before making this announcement? This coincided just as the Sanders campaign is announcing its Vermont kickoff event happening next Tuesday.
I was not aware that Bernie was going to announce on Tuesday when I made my decision 3 days ago to endorse Hillary.
What about the fact that the policies that you talk about, that you're passionate about, and one of those is single-payer health care, really connect with the things that Bernie Sanders is fighting for as well? A lot of the things you said on this program today are things that could come right out of the mouth of Senator Bernie Sanders. I mean, why endorse Hillary Clinton, just as you say, because her husband, Bill Clinton, did a job that you thought was very good? They're not the same person.
Well, no, it's not because of Bill Clinton. It's because of Hillary Clinton. I truly believe that Hillary Clinton, she's been Secretary of State. She's understood government from the inside, and she cares deeply about the middle class. And I think that she's the candidate to lead this nation. Having said that, I have tremendous respect for Bernie. And he and I are close friends. Listen, these primary battles are always awkward. I ran in a five-way primary to become governor. You know, it's not just Bernie that's a friend of mine. Martin O'Malley, who I expect to get in the race from Maryland, is a very close friend of mine. His wife, Kitty, is a good friend of mine. Jane's a big friend of mine. I mean, here, you know, these are always awkward situations. Having said that, the question for me is, who is best qualified to be president of the United States? And there is no doubt in my mind that Hillary Clinton is, and I'm going to work very hard for her. Now, in terms of single payer and the other issues, I am delighted that Bernie's in this race because I think he's going to raise issues that I care about, that he cares about, that will help influence the debate going forward. So I'm glad Bernie's in. I'm glad Martin O'Malley's in or going to get in. He's going to bring some really interesting ideas to this race. My choice is Hillary for president. I think I'm ready for Hillary, and I hope that America is too.
We have this question posted from Mark. He asks, why, when the governor himself supported banning teacher strikes after the October 2014 South Burlington strike, did the governor stay so silent during the debate that led to the defeat of the proposed bill that eliminated teacher strikes and prohibited working conditions imposed by school boards?
I wanted the right bill for to end teacher strikes. Listen, most of the states around us don't allow teacher strikes, and these are not, you know, radically conservative states. The NEA itself has always supported in the past the notion that we get rid of teacher strikes because it divides communities, it hurts kids, it hurts teachers, it hurts everybody involved. So the right bill means that it's fair to both sides and that you go through a collective bargaining process and then, you know, school boards can't impose and teachers can't strike. The bill that was debated in the House was not the perfect bill. So I wasn't going to push for something that I didn't think met the criteria. Now, I would have liked to see the bill pass because it would have kept the debate going. But I think it's an issue we should go back to.
I want to change tack a little bit here, Governor, and ask this. I mean, you've said that you are in favor of legalizing marijuana in Vermont. And I asked you this question a while back when the state budget deficit was first revealed to be well over $100 million. You said that even if a legalization bill were to be acted on in the session, just completed, it wouldn't do anything to alleviate this year's deficit. But how strongly are you behind a legalization bill? And I ask because one thing it would do is raise revenue for the state without raising taxes on a particular group or individual and without cutting benefits for state workers or programs that help the neediest Vermonters. And if you're really behind marijuana legalization, at least as a way of raising these critical funds, doesn't it make sense to do so sooner rather than later?
My bias is strongly towards legalization, but I don't think we should do it for the money. The money has been elusive to those who think that money is going to, you know, the marijuana legalization is going to bring you hordes of loot. It just hasn't worked that way. As you probably know, Colorado's projections are considerably below what they thought they were going to get. So my point is, don't make a choice like this for the money. make a choice like this because it makes sense. And I do believe that our prohibition policies against marijuana aren't working. And really what happens is, and forget the loot, I want to do it because our system's broken. Right now, if you talk to any high school kid in Vermont who we don't want smoking pot, or you talk to young people in Vermont who we don't want smoking pot, they'll tell you they can get pot as easily or more easily than they can get alcohol. Now, the reason for that is that we actually regulate the sale of alcohol. We do it in a logical way. We let adults buy it, and we don't let kids buy it. So my argument for legalization is just good common sense, good way to keep it out of the hands of folks who shouldn't have it. A drug dealer does not care how old you are when they sell you pot. The state of Vermont would.
Would you push for a bill next session?
Well, we got to figure out the timing. You know, as I've said before, I'm really glad that Governor Hickenlooper in Colorado, Governor Inslee in Washington State, and now others are joining us in going first because they're working out what works and what doesn't. What we've already learned some lessons from that. So let's keep watching.
I want to work in one more phone call quickly. Gene is on the line from Colchester. Hi, Gene.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You're on with the governor.
Hi, Gene. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm actually 60 year old right now, and I'm soon to retire, as many of my friends are also. But because Vermont taxes pensions, retirement, etc., a lot of people are leaving the state of Vermont. We love Vermont, and we almost feel like this is something we have to do. How do you feel about that?
I beg you not to. I beg you to stay. You know, some states tax retirement, other states don't. But you know, my plea is this. For those like me who've been lucky enough to make a good living in Vermont, I'd ask you to stick with us. You can't find a state government that is doing more with tax dollars to lift up those who don't have opportunity than the state of Vermont. I just don't think you can find a more progressive tax system, and you can't find a state that works harder to give everybody a shot. And when we tax you, it's to do good things. It's to make a difference for the state of Vermont. So what I say to people who get around retirement age is, you know, don't desert us now. We need you now more than ever. Stick with us.
Governor, given the fact that your dream of single-payer health care had to be dropped, that Vermont Health Connect failed to connect, if you will, the way you wanted it to, failure to convince lawmakers that a payroll tax was needed to address the Medicaid cost shift. I mean, do you feel strongly that you need another term in office to achieve the things that you want for Vermont and the kind of Vermont that you envision that you believe is best for the people of this state?
So, Mitch, I know that's the narrative and some of it's true and some of it's not. So I just want to cheer you up a little bit. When I talked about single payer, there were two pieces to single payer that were absolutely critical to me. One was moving to a publicly financed system so everyone can have health care regardless of premium, regardless of where they work, where they live, how rich they are. The other was to get cost spending under control in health care, because I believe that no system will work, public financing or private premiums, if we don't get the costs under control. So we are now working on an all-payer waiver with D.C., with President Obama, and Al Gobey at the Green Mountain Health Care Board, to try and move our entire state from one that reimburses for fee-for-service quantity for one that reimburses for quality and healthy outcomes. And if we can accomplish that, I'm going to feel that we are on the right track to affordable health care that's holding back the ability for Vermonters to pay their bills. So that's what I'm focused on. That's what I really want to get done next. And I think we should all be in on this conversation to be good for patients, good for our pocketbooks. We should do it together.
Do you need another term to do it?
Well, you know, I'm 5 months into a 24-month term. So I'm focused on doing the job that Vermonters hired me to do. Having said that, I want to have this job. I love this job as long as I can make a difference, and as long as Vermonters will have me do it with things that are going to really make a difference. I think healthcare will make a difference.
Governor Peter Shumlin, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today to come in and speak with us. Really,
thanks for having me, Mitch.
And that's it for today. Tomorrow we'll speak with Steve Jeffrey, outgoing executive director of the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, and we'll look at what has changed for local governments over the more than 30 years he's been in charge. Send your questions or comments about Vermont's cities and towns and the issues they're facing to Vermont Edition at vpr.net, and tune in tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sam Gail Rosen. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And today is the last day for our production assistant, Devin Karambelis. She graduated last weekend with honors from UVM, and she's done outstanding work during her time here at VPR. We wish her great success in her future endeavors. Way to go, Devin. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Thanks for listening to the program today.